My guest, Jake Arnott, is a British crime writer whose first two books have been very well reviewed. His first novel, The Long Firm, was a bestseller in England and is being made into a five-part series by the BBC. His second novel, He Kills Coppers, has just been published in the U.S. In the Sunday New York Times book review, Hugo Lindgren wrote, "Like the best crime novels, He Kills Coppers is really not about crime or even about criminals. It's about cultural disintegration, a city stuck in the shadowy interlude between the end of empire and whatever was coming next." Arnott positively revels in the filthy, rotting decadence of gangster-era London, spinning a tale that has the authority of well-researched fact and the felicity of fiction. The story revolves around three men: Billy Porter, who kills three cops in 1966 in London and disappears into assumed identities; Frank Taylor, the partner of one of the murdered cops; and Tony Meehan, the tabloid journalist and closeted homosexual who breaks the story of the cop killings. Let's start with a reading from the point of view of the tabloid journalist.
I suppose I'd always wanted to write. Ever since I can remember, I was making things up, telling tales, nasty stories. But this creativity was never nurtured when I was a child, never understood. "You're a dirty little liar," my mother's own words. Can you imagine the effect of such an accusation on a young mind? I did well at school, but I got into trouble, an unpleasant business that meant that I left earlier than I might have done. I wasn't expelled, but the headmaster asked me to leave. Mother was very upset, but she never saw my side of the story. I worked as a clerk in a pickle factory for 2 years. I did shorthand at night school and got a job as a junior reporter on the Reading Mercury. Not terribly exciting, I must say, but at least I was writing. I stuck that for a year or so, but as soon as I'd saved enough money, I came up to London and got away from Mother at last. I had some mad idea that it was here I would become a great writer. I got a cheap bedsit in West London, just a few meagre possessions, a Remington typewriter, a battered chest of drawers that I improvised as a desk. I was a loner. I'd always felt different, apart from people, like Colin Wilson's Outsider. I was an existentialist, I decided. As with Barbusse's hero that Wilson refers to, the man outside, I had come to the capital with no genius, no mission to fulfil, no remarkable feelings to bestow. I have nothing, and I deserve nothing. Yet in spite of it, I desire some recompense. I was meant to be a writer, I felt. This could be my revenge, my way of getting back at them all, my way of articulating the painful solitude. The problem was, what to write about? I waited in vain for inspiration. I managed a half-finished draft of a novel. Derivative stuff. Purple prose and descriptions of emotions I'd never felt. I couldn't bear to look at it. I kept it in a shoebox under my bed, collecting dust. I had this received notion that a novel should be somehow autobiographical, that fiction should be personal. But the very thought of it made me feel sick. I didn't want to write about myself. I had no desire to express my inner feelings. On the contrary, I wanted to use ink the way an octopus does, to hide. The money ran out, and I started doing bits of freelance journalism. I had the basic skills for it, after all. The gutter press was teeming with life, with stories. I found what I was looking for, a peephole to look through. I particularly liked crime stories. The more brutal, the better.
That's Jake Arnott reading an excerpt of his novel, He Kills Coppers. Jake, would you describe the tabloid reporter and how he fits into the novel?
Well, Tony's sort of a well-adjusted psychopath. It's funny that apparently there are more psychopaths out there than we imagine there are, and some of them lead quite lives of anonymity. Of course, Tony is attracted to the sort of crime journalism, the tabloid crime journalism that's really wolfed down by the public, because he is drawn to some of those impulses himself.
Is part of the research you had to do to research what the tabloids in London were like in the 60s and how they covered crime and what the crimes were?
Mm-hmm. I spoke to a guy who'd worked on the news desk at the Sunday People all through the 60s and the 70s, and so I got a lot of the colour of what was then the British press, Fleet Street, it was called. It's completely changed now. It's all become computerised and moved out to Docklands. But back then, it had a particular character to it that I wanted to capture.
What did you want to capture about that character?
Well, it's the seediness, really. I mean, this is sort of what I do, the kind of dark side of society. And there was something quite gloomy and almost gothic about the sort of Fleet Street life.
What were the big crime stories in 1966 when part of your novel set?
Well, the central crime in the novel is based on a real event that happened just a few days after the World Cup final. And it was a very hot summer. Time magazine had just called London the swinging city. Everything seemed to be going well. And suddenly three unarmed police officers got gunned down in broad daylight in a West London street. And even now in Britain, that would be quite shocking. But back in 66, it was a sort of a really disturbing event.
The title of your novel is He Kills Coppers. Can you talk about where that title comes from?
Yes, it's a football chant. It was a chant sung to the tune of London Bridge is Falling Down. And originally it was a chant about the cop killer that I base my fictional cop killer on. Somebody called Harry Roberts, and it would go, Harry Roberts is our friend, is our friend, is our friend, Harry Roberts is our friend, he kills coppers. And I'm very interested in kind of modern mythology and sort of sort of things that are folkloric in an urban sort of age, and this was one of them. It's extraordinary when somebody in a very modern age becomes a sort of folk devil or a folk hero to some people. And I felt this song sort of reverberating down through the ages.
Why did that cop killer become a folk hero in some areas?
It's an interesting question. I think all sorts of things came together at the same time. In the 60s, when the event happened, there was a lot of social change. But generally then, the police would have been considered to be very well trusted by the majority of society. They also up to no good because they had such a free hand. Then as things slowly did change through the 60s and 70s, a lot of young people felt more instinctively oppositional towards the police. And people generally, because of the corruption trials that happened in Scotland Yard in the 70s, a lot of just ordinary people lost the sort of blind faith they had in the police as well. So It's funny, I ended up writing quite a lot about the history of the police force, but seen at different angles, really, and often by the crowd themselves. Often, a few times in the book, there are sort of set pieces where it's the crowd that are the character, not individuals themselves.
When you were growing up, were you exposed to a lot of crime or pretty well sheltered from crime?
A little bit of both, nothing serious, but I did get quite consistently in trouble when I was younger, but nothing hugely sort of I was no great criminal mastermind, let's put it that way.
Shoplifting, things like that?
That sort of thing, yeah.
What about in your neighborhood? Was it a crime-ridden neighborhood, or was it a pretty calm?
No, it was pretty suburban and quite calm. But the city, you see, the London was always the thing that drew us in, you know, to go out, because it was near, and I always wanted to sort of come down to the big city.
You left school at the age of 16, is that right?
Yeah.
So I figure you must have had some authority issues as a young man.
I certainly did. I think, looking back, I think, God, what a handful, really. But it is, yeah. I didn't get on with secondary school, and I didn't really get on, I suppose, with things around authority when I was growing up. I think I wasn't very happy about myself as well. I wasn't really sure about all sorts of things about myself. And I really needed to go off and sort all of that out, really.
And what were the things about yourself that you had to settle?
I think about... A lot had to do with my sexuality, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Other things as well. But I didn't feel, I felt terrified by the whole prospect of being, a bit about being not normal.
Right. What is a whole coming out kind of thing?
Sort of, yeah.
My guest is Jake Arnott. His new novel is called He Kills Coppers. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is British crime writer Jake Arnott. His new novel is called He Kills Coppers. You lived in squats for a while when you were, what, in your teens?
Late teens and through my 20s, yeah.
So basically these are like abandoned homes that you...
that you occupy. There was a lot of unoccupied property in London at that time. So it was quite widespread.
One of the jobs you took on when you were young was working at a mortuary. What kind of work were you doing?
Well, it was a medical school mortuary, and I was... well, my official title was a technician, but essentially I was a glorified cleaner. Though I did assist in the odd embalming here and there. It was pretty grim stuff I had to do, I have to say.
It's stuff that comes in handy, though, for crime writing?
Well, it's funny, I haven't used it as much as I might. Certainly with Tony's sensibility, the journalist, I used that sort of sense of morbidity I could plug into.
Why did you decide to write about crime?
I'm not sure if I did make that decision consciously. I started with the first book, The Long Firm. I knew I was going to write about a criminal who was homosexual, and from the eyes of one of his boyfriends. But then it expanded into a big novel, and I realised it was going to be sort of a novel that would involve gangland in the 60s. And so then the second book came after that. I don't think I'm a crime writer per se, but I am fascinated by crime as a way of looking at society.
There are some gay activists over the years who have protested when homosexuals are depicted in a movie as the psychotic or the killer, because they fear that the implication is that homosexuality is a result of or leads to antisocial evil behavior. So, as a writer who is gay and who has created a killer who is homosexual, what would you say to people who might argue that this is a bad depiction of homosexuality?
Well, I think there was a time when there was a lot of talk about the need for positive role models, and hopefully we've moved away from that, because I think a positive stereotype is just as bad as a negative stereotype. And I think that it's important to feel that one's experience, and whatever it is universal and human. Actually, in the first book, I based Harry Starks on a real-life London gangster who was homosexual. And I always thought, I mean, he's certainly not a positive role model, but for me, he always gave me a sense that there's a broad human experience here. It's not confined to a particular type. I think that can be quite liberating. I think we need villains as much as we need heroes.
And that's where you come in, huh?
Yeah, I can provide them.
What were some of the things that you went through, either individually or in a kind of larger social, political way, that had the biggest impact on you, either artistically or politically?
I think when my house burnt down, I was squatting in this lovely house in South London, and I came home one night and there'd been a fire, and suddenly I was homeless. Also, all my possessions had been burnt in the fire. And then, just as we were trying to organise things, the police turned up and arrested us all on suspicion of arson. So in one evening, I lost my home, my possessions and my liberty at one fell stroke. It was extraordinary. It was sort of months before I got back onto some sort of normal track of things. But it did have a profound effect on the way I thought about, not so much politically, but just the very sort of notion of existence, really. That suddenly everything can just go.
And did that make you, as the croupier would say, hold on tightly or let go lightly?
It definitely makes you let go lightly. I mean, it was kind of instant Buddhism. I wouldn't recommend it, but strangely enough, there was a feeling of being able to let go of all these things, because none of them really matter that much. Of course, then I also there was a lot of frustration and anger I felt about things as well at the same time. But I'd say the things I miss most were maybe things I'd written, maybe things, letters, photographs that you couldn't reproduce. It's things that almost have a cultural significance rather than a material significance. You know, anything else can be replaced, or, you know, it's not that important anyway. It's only an object.
Jake Arnott, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jake Arnott's new novel is called He Kills Coppers.